Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's story is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Caitlin for bringing Elijah's story to my attention. I'm actually at a loss in how I can ease you into this week's story. I sat with a big old glass of red wine just staring at my computer screen, unsure what to write. What am I going to say? I'm very conflicted when it comes to the mother in this story. She was selfish in the moment she made the father take Elijah. However, also remember she was very young and in an unhealthy relationship. She wasn't perfect, far from it, but she had no way of knowing what was going to happen. The father never showed any indication he was anything but a loving father, not until that moment. Should she have also faced criminal charges? I really don't know. I would love to know what you all think on this one. January 2008, Galveston, Texas. A couple were enjoying a day off together, taking a drive to the local seawall to see if they could spot some wildlife. This was when they saw a doll on the side of the road. That didn't seem right. It was when they got out of the car for a closer inspection. The true horror of what they were actually seeing would go on to haunt the couple forever. This is Elijah's story.
At that point, I had hit my breaking point with stress, and I was, you know, I was scared, I was panicking. I hit my breaking point and I broke. At that point, I felt that the only way to make him to stop crying was to kill him.
Elijah Mullis was born October 29, 2007 in Houston, Texas, to parents 26-year-old Karen Coburg and 21-year-old Travis Mullis. Karen and Mullis were already doing it tough before she had gotten pregnant. They were essentially homeless, but Karen's mother Carolyn had been helping them out financially as much as she could. Carolyn would later state that while the couple were struggling, they were in love and making it work. She said that when she went to visit with them shortly after Elijah was born, it seemed like they were great parents. Elijah was this super adorable, chubby, healthy baby boy. Nothing mattered to Karen and Mullis but Elijah. However, Carolyn would also later state that she wasn't the biggest fan of her daughter with Mullis. Yes, he was a good father and attentive, but he couldn't hold down a job for longer than a few weeks, never really putting in the effort to financially support his new family. Though she would admit that he was the primary caregiver and did most of the day-to-day parenting duties for the newborn. We are hitting the ground running with this story. So before we get into the lead-up to, look, I'm going to say it, this is one of the most horrifically horrendous murders I've covered. I think what really affects me with this one, this wasn't systematic child abuse. Elijah was loved and looked after. There was no neglect, no abuse to really alert CPS of this family. But what is at the core is a ticking time bomb. One whose childhood created an adult who was escalating with his sick desires and who would ultimately act out on them on his infant baby boy. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. Let's rewind the story to 2005. 18-year-old Travis Mullis was living in New Jersey, and he met a woman online named Michelle Nichols, and she lived in Houston. Mullis would lie to her and say he was this big music producer, DJ Rock, and that he had his own record label. During this time, Mullis would be kicked out of home and he would be homeless. Michelle invited him to stay with her in Houston. This relationship would be short-lived. But where this would become important, shortly after Karen and Mullis had their baby, Michelle and her now husband, Darren, would invite them to come stay with them and their four children in their three-bedroom trailer in Alvin, Texas. Karen, Mullis, and a newborn Elijah were sharing a room with Michelle and Darren's two sons. Elijah not even having his own crib. He slept in a baby car seat. The second was Michelle and Darren. And the third would be their two daughters, aged 2 and 8 years old. Karen and Mullis, could not afford to contribute to rent and food, again leaning on Carolyn to support them. But we know the money wasn't going to that. Cigarettes and alcohol suddenly became their priority. So essentially, Michelle was supporting 4 adults and 5 children. Because of this, things were starting to get tense in the household, and Michelle spoke quite vocally that Karen and Mullis's time was limited living with them, unless they could stand on their own feet. This also created tension between Karen and Mullis. And January 28, 2008, the couple would spend the day and evening arguing, Mullis leaving with Elijah to cool off some at around 5 a.m. That very same morning, Jesse and Esmeralda Zaro were enjoying a day off together, and they decided to go to the Galveston seawall looking for coyotes. The couple would often go exploring looking for different wildlife, so this wasn't unusual for them. At around 9 a.m, the couple spotted what they initially thought to be a dole near the side of Seawall Boulevard and Ferry Road. What they saw made Jesse feel uneasy, and he pulled the vehicle off of the road to take a closer look, telling his wife to stay in the car. What he would discover he was actually seeing was a small baby, with blonde hair and wearing only a blue disposable diaper. Jesse would later testify during the criminal trial that what he saw that day made him ill, that he cried and nearly collapsed, before running back to his wife to tell her what he had found. There was panicked confusion, and thinking his wife didn't have her cell phone, Jesse flagged down a trucker who called 911.
Investigators spent hours searching the area thoroughly, looking for any clue that could help explain how a baby ended up on the side of the road.
What we now believe to be an anywhere from a 3 to 6 month old child. It's a white male, blondish hair, dressed in a diaper.
The baby had suffered severe head trauma. Police discovered an infant car seat only about 30 feet away.
Just by the location of the car seat, it appears that the child was in the car seat at one time.
Investigators are trying now to determine if the child was thrown from a car and ended up face down in the grass.
It's a nightmare, you know? It's horrible.
Jesse Zaro first discovered the baby. He can't get the image out of his mind.
I got out of the car and looked and said, what the heck? And I woke up and he goes, it was a baby. It was a little baby. It was horrible. I went to pieces. I just could not believe it. It's horrible.
Zaro told reporters he thought the baby was a doll, but quickly realized what he found was a child.
I didn't know how to handle myself. I cried. It hit me like a ton of rocks. I've never seen anything like this before.
Police tell us the focus now is finding out who the child is and how he ended up here.
Officers would quickly arrive on the scene. This blue-eyed baby boy was lying face down with his head to the side. A blue baby sock was found close to the baby's body, while a baby car seat was found 30 feet away. This sweet baby boy's body was already covered in ants, despite only being there for a short period of time. There were no missing persons reports of a small infant reported in the area, with the theory that possibly the baby was thrown from a car at high speed. Police gave the local news media a police release, pleading for anyone to come forward to claim the unidentified child. Meanwhile, Karen was worried. Almost 3 hours had passed since Mullis had left with Elijah, and there was no sign of their return. She called their friends, the hospital, and then, curiously, Karen called the Galveston County Medical Examiner looking for her son. Both the hospital and the medical examiner thought the call was odd, to say the least, and they contacted the police with Elijah's description. Right away, they knew who the baby they found was, 3-month-old Elijah Mullis. Police contacted Karen and escorted her to the Galveston Police Department without telling her exactly what was going on. They were already confident with who the baby was, and they just wanted to know what was going on here. Karen would identify her son via photos of his remains. Shortly after, she stopped cooperating with authorities and hired a lawyer. And then she would travel to New York and check herself into Bellevue Hospital's Medical Health Ward for observation. The autopsy determined that Elijah died from blunt force trauma to the head. If it is any comfort, the medical examiner does believe Elijah died instantly. He also had abrasions on his face and rectangular patterns on his skull that were consistent with someone stepping on him with a shoe. Unfortunately, there was also evidence of sexual abuse. However, what that evidence was, it's never been released publicly. Travis Mullis was nowhere to be found. He was last seen driving a 4-door silver 2002 Hyundai Accent. duct tape basically holding together the rear passenger door. But the authorities couldn't account for him or his car. February 1st, 2008, Mullis would walk into Pennsylvania Police Department and turn himself in. He would give a full confession. Travis Mullis was brought into the police interrogation room and he was asked to give them his belt and shoelaces, which is normal safety procedures for someone on suicide watch. He admitted openly at that point, as he removed the shoelaces, that these were the shoes he used to stomp on his son's head. And this is when the truth of what happened that morning would be revealed. The couple had been pushing each other's buttons over the night. Karen wasn't happy about their living situation and wanted Mullis to contribute more financially. This would continue until 2 a.m. Karen gave Mullis $20 to buy some food and cigarettes. Before leaving, however, Mullis awoke the 8-year-old daughter of his friend and asked her if she wanted to go for a ride with him.
At that time, I had asked her to take her pants off. She had said no. She started to cry. She got scared. I also got startled. I spoke with my girlfriend. She got scared that we were going to be thrown out of the house because of that. She was also scared that I might try to do it again.
On the way home, the pair stopped at a school where they walked to a basketball court and playground. He asked her to remove her pants with plans to sexually assault her. But she said no, and obviously she got upset, which in turn worked Mullis up, and he told her to come back with him to the car and they would go home, which they did. Back at the trailer, Mullis confessed to Karen what had happened with the little girl, and that he wanted to go wake the girl's mother, Michelle, and tell her too. But obviously there was concern she would throw them out of the house and they would be again homeless. Their living situation was already on thin ice, and this would no doubt push Michelle over the edge. This all would understandably result in a massive argument that would last for hours. Then, seemingly out of nowhere, Mullis brought up a story about stocks he owned, stocks he could sell to get them a house of their own, something Karen had never heard about before. But Mullis would show her what would later be determined to be a fake account on his phone. Mullis told Karen he wanted to go and get the paperwork so he could access the money from the stocks. Karen wanted to go with him, but Mullis said no. So instead, Karen insisted he take baby Elijah. Karen would later explain her decision here. Mullis had a tendency to take off for days at a time, so in Karen's mind, him taking Elijah with him was like insurance policy to ensure Mullis returned, because Elijah was due for his next feed by 9 a.m. Mullis said he left because he needed time to think, and that he was worried he was a danger to the children in the household, a thought that he had shared with Karen, but she still insisted that he take their son. Elijah was still asleep strapped in his baby car seat when Mullis drove off, headed towards the Galveston seawall. Mullis was in a panic and unsure what to do next. He would admit to the police he was yelling at himself, and this woke Elijah up. That he initially tried to console the baby, bouncing him on his knee and blowing in his face. What happens next is uncertain, because some news sources state that Mullis confessed, but then the authorities would drop the charges citing lack of evidence. But I will mention it today, because initially Mullis was charged with aggravated sexual assault. Now, Mullis may or may not have confessed at the time to sexually abusing Elijah, and given Mullis's history of rape and sexual assault, I wouldn't be surprised if this did happen. Mullis's criminal trial would speak of his extremely damaging childhood. By the age of 3, he was molested by his uncle, who was also his adopted father. And then when he was 13, he raped his 8-year-old cousin. He even sexually assaulted his own grandmother. Add on to that, the attempted assault on his friend's daughter only hours earlier. Elijah's cries became uncontrollable at this point. Mullis laid his son on the back seat, putting his hands around Elijah's neck and squeezing, using his thumbs to crush the infant's windpipe. Mullis would tell investigators Elijah started to gurgle and he let go, causing Elijah to cry more. Mullis then took his son out of the car and placed him on the ground, lifted his foot off of the ground and down on Elijah's head, over and over, at least 4 times, until he felt the 3-month-old skull give way. Mullis would demonstrate what he did with a tissue box. These were full force stomps. As I mentioned, I guess thankfully, the medical examiner would determine it was most likely Elijah died after the first stomp onto his head. Mullis checked for a pulse and breathing, but there was no signs of life. Elijah was dead. He took the baby car seat out of the car and threw it as hard as he could over the seawall. Then he picked up Elijah by the legs and tossed him in the same direction, tossed him away like he was nothing. Mullis claimed he then drove to East Beach and that he considered suicide by drowning, although he changed his mind and instead drove to Baltimore, Michigan to see his father. He would make several stops on the way asking churches for money for fuel and food, not forgiveness, before arriving in Pennsylvania, where he would ultimately turn himself in after travelling more than 1,500 miles. He would be held on a $1 million bond and extradited back to Texas awaiting trial. February 2nd, 2008, in the days after Elijah was found, a vigil was held at Livingstone's church. About a dozen people gathered at the church for the memorial service. It was small and emotional, with Karen in attendance. Quote, "Mummy loves you so much. Thank you for giving me the best 3 months of my life." Unquote. Karen spoke about missing having naps with her son, describing how he would light up with happiness during baths. Quote, "There were so many things I was looking forward to. Your first steps, your first tooth, your first word, your first day of school, your first dance, your first date." Unquote. She said she had a whole life planned out for them, that she now must accept Elijah will never grow up and have children of his own. Quote, "I miss you every second of the day." Unquote. Karen left the service clutching a blue teddy bear. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. March 7th, 2011. During the trial, the jury was shown the written and videotaped confession where Mullis admitted to his crimes. The defence attorneys asked the jurors to consider the lesser offence of manslaughter, focusing on his history of mental illness that developed during his early childhood. And honestly, the defence had a difficult task representing Mullis. He confessed, and confessions are deemed somewhat definitive in the eyes of juries. In their closing arguments, the defence asked the jury not to minimalise the appalling nature of the crimes Mullis committed. However, they asked them to keep in mind what Mullis had went through that led him to that point. The defence spoke of how his father abandoned the family when he was born, and then his mother died of an overdose when he was only 10 months old. Mullis's aunt and uncle would adopt him, but then, as I mentioned before, his new adoptive father would start molesting him from 3 years old. By age 11, Mullis had homicidal thoughts, spending years in and out of psychiatric care, counselling and state care, being diagnosed with ADHD, bipolar, depression, anxiety, oppositional defiance disorder and PTSD. And then he was hospitalised with suicidal thoughts, prescribed with psychotropic medications which he stopped taking about 3 years before killing Elijah because he couldn't afford the medication. During his incarcerations as a juvenile and as an adult, Mullis assaulted staff members, feigned suicidal tendencies, violated rules and created hit lists. Ultimately, the defence argued that Mullis never intended to murder his son Elijah, that he only wanted to end the crying. The prosecution argued that simply Mullis was a monster who manipulated people, was deceitful, and refused any medical and psychiatric help he was offered, that Mullis was a ticking time bomb. The jurors crying when they saw photos of the baby at the crime scene. March 22, 2011. The jury would take only an hour to deliberate, finding Travis Mullis guilty of capital murder. As I mentioned earlier, the initial charge of aggravated sexual assault was dropped, prosecutors choosing not to pursue those charges due to lack of evidence. And the jury recommended the death penalty, which Judge John Ellister would agree. When the sentence was read, Mullis had his hand over his mouth, portraying no emotion, just as he had throughout the entire trial. Mullis chose not to appeal the order to have him executed. Actually, he would insist the execution should happen quicker, his lawyers not filing a clemency petition with the Texas Board of Pardons and Parole. Travis Mullis's last words were reportedly, quote, "I do regret the decision to take the life of my son. I apologise to the mother of my son, the victim's family. I have no ill will towards the court, the justice system, the prosecution or the execution protocol. The morality of execution is between you and God. It was my decision that put me here. I am ready, warden." Unquote. Travis Mullis was executed September 24, 2024 by lethal injection at the state penitentiary in Huntsville, Texas. He was declared dead by 7:01 p.m. No one from Mullis's family nor Elijah's mother were present for the execution. A memorial grew for Elijah near the seawall where he was found. People left candles, flowers and teddy bears for the baby boy. He was then buried near his grandmother's home in Greenwich, Connecticut, with a headstone that named him as Elijah Coburg, completely denouncing Mullis as Elijah's father. Even though Elijah was only in this world for 3 months, he was very loved by his mother, and despite being imperfect, she did love Elijah very much. His mother, Carolyn, would say that Elijah was extraordinarily beautiful, describing him as having steel blue eyes and cute little reddish blonde hair. She said that she knew all babies were beautiful, but he was just very precious. That it hurt her inside not being given the opportunity to be present in her grandson's life. I've made it known that I'm very conflicted when it comes to the death penalty, but I cannot mourn a man like Travis Mullis. He made his choices, and the result of that consequence was that he was put to death. I can only feel for Elijah and for people like Jesse Arrow and his wife, who found that beautiful baby boy, and they reacted with more emotion in that moment than Mullis did for his entire experience during the process of admitting what he had done. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice, and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by CS. Additional writing, hosting and production was by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.